This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. As always, I am thrilled that you are here listening to this week's episode. Really means a lot to me each and every week to have you guys listen in and see what we got going on. And it's usually a diversity of topics, and this week's going to be no different. Real quick, had a hard learned lesson this week. It was a safe, fun lesson, but it was a lesson nevertheless. So, went deer hunting this week, took my flintlock out. You know, I enjoy that as much as anything throughout deer season, and got to see a lot of deer this one evening. I believe it was Saturday evening. I was able to I was invited to a property that has a good deer population, has a little bit of habitat work done to it, some well-placed blinds that I was able to basically have a very luxurious hunt to try to shoot a doe. And gracious offer. I appreciate that person for having me. And I had a great sit with them. They actually sat with me, and we got to talk the whole time and catch up, and it was really, really fun. When I had left to go hunting that evening, my gun had been cleaned. I had cleaned it the weekend before when I was upstate hunting. I'd emptied my gun, cleaned it, and I loaded it right before I left. So fresh powder, bullet, everything else, no problems there. The pan was clean, nothing obstructing that by any means. And when I sit in a blind with the windows closed, I never put pan powder in the gun, because usually in a blind you can move around, you have time in some of these settings. And I learned the hard way one time that if you have pan powder in the gun and you're breathing in that blind and it's just a high humid environment, it can dampen the powder. And so I usually don't put powder in the gun. Might even stick a paper towel in the pan and let my hammer all the way forward. And then when the time comes, I'll add powder and shoot. And right at quitting time, I had a doe and a fawn come right up 60 yards. It was perfect. And I got the gun down and I put pan powder in. It's kind of dark, but I had one of those pan powder pens. You push down and you get what you need. And I know if I do it two or three times, I have plenty of charge there. Tapped it around the way it should have been, put the gun up on the deer, and at this point, she's looking at us. She knows something's wrong, but she doesn't know what. Had a nice, clean rest, squeezed the trigger, and first time this ever happened to me with this gun, the powder in the pan burned up immediately, but it did not ignite the charge. And after I did that, first of all, I was dumbfounded. She saw the flash in the gun. She kind of ran up the hill. I actually almost got a second opportunity. I was putting pan powder in, getting on her to aim, and then she took off again. But after I thought about it a little bit, the one thing that I usually do, and I didn't, I forgot when I was getting ready to hunt that day. I have a set of, just different cleaning things for your pan. One is a pipe cleaner, one is a pick, another one's a brush. And I usually take that pick, it's basically a dull needle, and I will poke the touch hole and break up my my ignition powder, my 2F in my breech. And I've noticed that if I do that, it usually is just like another little thing that will help break up and get that powder into the breech and ignite the gun. And for whatever reason, I didn't do that. So without doing that, was that the reason? I have no idea. It just blows my mind that it happened. But hey, the good news is there's still a week left in season. I'm still going to have an opportunity to go again. I really want to shoot one more because I went through my freezer and realized I don't have enough burger to get through this entire year. So with that in mind, I'm going to really try like crazy this last week to fill one more tag and get some hamburger. One more cool thing that happened I'll share with you before we get into this week's episode. I had my year, my Christmas with my in-laws. And we usually do it at different times of the year just because, my brother-in-laws and sister-in-laws, they come from different parts of the country. And, we got to visit. This was the past weekend that we did it. And it was great to see them. Some of them I haven't seen in a year or more. And it was a blessing to have that family time. One of the cool things that we do, and I'm so glad that we do this, is we will kind of sit down and share the things that happen throughout the year, the biggest highlights, and talk a little, and then we'll request, like, would you guys pray for me for this in 2025? Would you keep me in mind that this is something that is weighing on my mind and my heart in 2025, and would you be a prayer warrior in supporting me with whatever God has in store for this? And the first years that we did it, man, it felt uncomfortable. It felt weird. I didn't want to do it. It was that uncomfortable, tough conversation. And now I look forward to that so much because I have seen what God has done over these past few years in their lives and in my life. And I'm telling you guys this because I want you to know, don't be afraid to have the tough conversations. Whatever that means and whatever that looks like in your life, don't be afraid to sit down and talk about important things with your wife, your children, your parents, your friends, your coworkers. Sometimes having those tough conversations from a position of love and humility can land you some wonderful, wonderful things if you just have that tough conversation. It's amazing what can happen if you don't stay silent over the tough things. So I wanted to share that with you because it's impacted me, and I really think it can impact you. Let's get into this week's episode. This week, we have Hunter Scott and Tyler Hanna. Now, if you know those names, you know that Hunter Scott is the owner and founder of PA Boys Outdoor social media page, which is a huge blown-up page, Instagram and Facebook and everything else, and a lot of great hunting content that comes from there. Tyler Hanna is the owner-operator of H3 Game Calls. These two companies have partnered together, and with that has developed the relationship between these two guys and a new journey that's going to embark in 2025, and that is New Era Habitat Consulting. These two guys are going to be doing food plot, property management recommendations and plan implementation and food plot installation and things like that. And we're going to sit down and talk about that with these guys. What better time to plan for next year's hunting season than when this one is coming to a close and it's fresh in your mind? The things that were wrong for you and you want to see improvement on, maybe you need help with, this is the type of podcast that I think is gets the fire rolling. Maybe it'll spark a little bit of thought. Maybe, who knows, maybe you want to reach out to these guys and see if they can help you guys out this fall. So we are going to dive right into this episode with these boys talking about Habitat Consulting. Just a shout out real quick before we do from our partners, Radix Hunting. So if you guys are looking for trail cameras, tree stands, blinds, feeders, trail camera accessories, you need to check out Radix Hunting because the quality that is in these products and the price point that is available to you, this is gear, high quality gear made by hunters who understand the needs of somebody trying to be at the top level of the game that they're on. And that shows in their product, and it's not going to break the bank. Check out Radix Hunting for that high-quality gear. Let's get to this episode. Joining us on this week's episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman, I have Hunter Scott and Tyler Hanna from PA Boys and H3 Game Calls. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the show. How you been?
Good. Thanks for having us. We appreciate the opportunity to come on with you and chat about hunting and land management and everything in between.
Yeah, first and foremost, how'd your guys' hunting seasons go?
Hunter, you want to go? I'll let you go.
Yeah, so I tagged out the first night of archery season. That would be the statewide archery season there in the beginning of October. I had a buck that I had patterned that entire week before, every night hitting a food plot between 6 and 6:30. And I knew it was just a matter of right place, right time, and ultimately I was able to capitalize there. The first night of archery season, I did jump into a lease in Missouri with my father here. We went out the first and second week of November. I sadly did not have any luck, but my father shot a nice buck out there. So it's up and down season, just between my father and I, because we do all of our hunting together. We shot both of our bucks over food plots again this year. So that's the second year in a row now that we've both taken bucks over food plots that we've planted and installed. So overall, it was a very successful season from the PA Boys, Hunter and Russ side.
So my season was good. it was a little rough to start. I didn't have a target buck really in mind that I could chase right away. I had a couple decent deer that I knew were 4.5, but I wasn't so sure if I wanted to shoot them yet. So it wasn't until we got into that third week of October, I had to really start narrowing down my options for what I was going to take a look at targeting, and was luckily able to catch up with a buck I call Jester. It's a deer that didn't live on our lease property, but we known him to travel in the rut at times and knew a general area where he usually frequented throughout the rut portion of the season. And I was able to catch up with him on November 1st. I actually shot him over a water hole, which was my first time doing that, which is pretty cool to see the dynamics of how much a water hole plays factors into deer movement. So I was able to harvest him on November 1st and then just enjoyed the rest of the season hunting with family and doing some filming and wrapped it up and ready for turkey season now.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I was just talking about this with Aaron Hepler and a couple other friends that, you know, whitetail biologists and a lot of research in QDMA over the years has shown that, you know, whitetails don't need a lot of water intake and they retain so much moisture from the plants that they eat and they can get their moisture content from that. And I just got to say, my hunting experiences the last few years have just not paralleled that. I have seen so much activity around water holes or springs or, you know, isolated places where there's standing water in a mountain or a water hole I created on a property or something like that. So really cool for you to get to experience that and harvest a buck. I mean, I remember the first water hole that I put on my place. I'd helped with some other ones, but I decided going into one year in 2020, I was going to put a water hole on my property just to try to add a little bit of traction. It was a specific deer I wanted to harvest, and lo and behold, I ended up killing him drinking out of the water hole at 20 yards. And it's just such a neat thing to see come full circle and add one little tool to the trade, I guess, so to speak, on a property. And that's kind of what we're going to get into a little bit today. So, you know, for those of you guys who don't know about PA Boys Outdoors and H3 Game Calls, before we get rolling on this, the next journey that you guys have installed, like, introduce yourself and talk a little bit about that and how it snowballed into what's happening in 2025.
Yeah. Hunter, do you want to go with that since we kind of intertwined there to start this whole adventure?
I mean, it all depends on how far back. Well, we'll kick it off and we'll talk. I'll bring up how we kind of got tied in with H3 Game Calls, and then you can take it from there. How about that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Cool. So I'm Hunter Scott. I'm the owner of PA Boys Outdoors. I started PA Boys Outdoors realistically in 2016, but 2019 was the big push I made to try to become established on social media. 2019, that fall, I was a senior at Slippery Rock University. I had my job lined up there for when I graduated in December, and I told myself if I'm going to ever try to make a go of pushing and having a social media type of account outdoors page, that was the time to try to do it. And I'll be honest with you, it's not with skill, but just kind of with luck and working algorithms, PA Boys Outdoors blew up. And 5 years from 2019, well, I guess we're in 2025 now. I should take that back. But we're all right around 30,000 followers. We've had made some awesome partners. We have a great staff, field staff now. We now have directors. Just from an organizational side, we've made some huge steps. Outdoor shows. We're returning to the Central Pennsylvania Outdoor Show. I'm not sure if you've heard of that or not, but it'll be this will be the fourth year that we've been at the Central Pennsylvania Outdoor Show. We'll be doing food plot seminars there. So it's kind of became a ritual for us to go there. We got some other outdoor shows on the schedule here for the next month or two that we're really looking forward to as well. But 2 years ago, Ty, a company called H3 Game Calls reached out to PA Boys Outdoors on Instagram, and Tyler messaged us and said, hey, how about we send you a couple goose calls to field test? Let us know your thoughts. And it was like in August that happened 2 years ago. And my gosh, how our relationship's grown and into what it's kind of become today, just from a couple goose calls that you sent over for us to field test. It's just been an awesome partnership. And on top of the business relationship that we have, Tyler and I have established a great friendship here over the last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing what things can turn into in life, like the friendship and partnership and now business that Hunter and I have together. And so starting H3 Game Calls, always been a big hunter, very avid turkey hunter. Probably my favorite thing to do is turkey hunt. But one day I just thought I'm going to start making some mouth calls for myself. So put a couple of these calls together and hunted throughout the season with them and had some success. And I think it was the last Saturday of season, my dad and I went out together and I made myself one. And we shoot these birds, call these birds with the two calls I made. We double up and we're sitting there against the tree. That's one thing we like to do. We sit there after the hunt and just kind of enjoy and take it in. And, I'm a big faith guy and, just kind of, say a little thank you and a prayer. And it just kind of hit me like, this is it. This is what you've been looking for in the outdoor industry. You know, we tried, my cousin and I tried the social media route, hunting group route, and we had no success. Like, you know, Hunter and the PA boys, they've had tremendous success with that, and we just couldn't get anything to go. And I told my cousin from the start, if we're going to be in the industry, we're going to need to have a product that we sell. That's how we're going to make it. And lo and behold, you know, just sitting there over those two birds we killed that morning, praying and thanking God for it, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks, like, hey, this is it. Start making calls. So H3 started out with just two handmade mouth calls that I made on my press the night before that day or night before the hunt, and we just built from there. So now we, you know, we offer turkey calls, waterfowl, deer, predator. You know, we've expanded our line. We probably have somewhere close to 70 products and calls that we carry between merchandise, calls. We have our coffee line. We have a whiskey line. We have really expanded and started to scale upwards over the past couple of years. So
very cool and exciting. And you know, to snowball from that is getting into the land management side of things, which is the new thing for 2025 for you guys. So Hunter, question for you. So I know you've done a lot of seminars and talking food plots and stuff, and you're getting a lot of interest, a lot of questions. What are some of the most common questions and the common holdups that people have that you encounter on your travels and your communication with other people who are getting into food plots?
So two off the top of my head, and first one's pretty general, but it's a question that somebody who's never really gotten into this before asks, and that is, what do I plant? I think that's one of the most common questions you get. Another one that I'll get frequently is, hey, you know, last fall hunting, whether it was archery rifle season, I'm seeing deer, but they're not in range. What can I do to try to get them in bow range, for example? And that's kind of where food plots can be a great way of trying to bring those deer in closer for you to be able to capitalize. Some other questions I get, some people who have established food plots, you get questions about liming, you get questions about fertilizing, weed control is another big one. So those are some very common questions that I've gotten personally here over the last couple of years.
Tyler, when it comes to taking your deer hunting to the next level, you know, Hunter's shared a lot about food plots. I know he loves food plots. I love food plots. I think they're a critical asset on private land. But sometimes it's not just food plots that get it done. So when you think about starting land management, habitat consulting, aside from food plots, what are some of the things that get you fired up that's going to help people that maybe they're missing the mark on when it comes to hunting on a piece of private land?
So first thing I'm going to do if I, with a consult with a client or even for myself personally, is I'm going to look at a topo map. I'm very big on topo maps and e-scouting. I do a lot of boots on the ground, but the first thing I do before going to a property, I'm going to e-scout it, and I'm going to find pinch points, funnels, you know, natural terrain features that are going to shift or funnel those deer into those areas. And then from there, we're going to start breaking it down to entry and exit routes. Where are we going to enter from, exit out of? That's probably the second biggest thing that I've experienced with hunting is if you're going to be successful, you got to be able to get in and get out without being detected. So looking at topo maps, studying those, figuring out your entrance routes in and out, and then you got to locate the bedding areas. And then from there, you can really start to hone in on, okay, this is where we should put a food plot because of bedding, entrance, exit, hunting on this wind direction or that wind direction. So we start then taking more of a tactical approach of how to be successful and strategically place these food plots around certain areas of the property.
I'll let this next question for either of you guys take it how you want. So there's definitely a journey when it comes to a property. You know, there's very few properties that ever get quote unquote finished. You know, you might get a property that it's fairly maxed out in its maintenance. You might get 90-95% of the way there as far as your habitat, your hunting strategy, you know, quality, TSI, browse, food plots, all that stuff, but the work's never done. But a lot of properties, a lot of people don't understand the big steps, the biggest hurdles that they need to overcome, whether that's the food plots, whether that is hunting strategy. So talk to me a little bit about when you look at a property that you've hunted in the past, maybe you've started some consults or you helped people in the past. Do you start with habitat first and then work the hunt into it? Or do you start with the hunt and then work the habitat around it?
Hunter, you want to take it or you want me to take
it? Yeah, I mean, to me personally, I think there's a happy medium to it. Depending on the property, I think it's big. If it's a property that I personally own, I'll get away with focusing on habitat before I hunt. If it's private ground that like someone like you or I would knock a door and ask for permission on, yeah, it makes it more challenging where, okay, you're going to have to focus on the hunt side first because you might be limited on what you can do for that habitat. Property that I have, habitat first, that way you're kind of setting the tone for the property. I think, number one, first and foremost, scouting is so important. I think all three of us can agree on that. That we have a property that we only ever really rifle hunted. We never archery hunted. We just had other ground to hunt. And we ended up switching over to try to archery hunt that. We had intel from what we've done from rifle season in past years, but to try to figure out how to archery hunt it, there's a different way that property needed to be hunted. That property is challenging because access is one way in, one way out. So that's a huge challenge, especially with the way the bedding area was laid out. What we decided that we need to do is one, and this is something that I'm ready to go back over here in the next couple of weeks and do, is just walk around the snow and scout. To me, that is so important to understand where those deer are traveling, where they're going from feed to bedding areas. That to me is most important. Once you can kind of crack the code with that, I'll be honest with you, I still run trail cameras. I run trail cameras year round in some places, especially in areas where I haven't really cracked that code to figure out how they're traveling. I have an area right now where there's a bedding area below it and there's a huge high wall above it that I have not hunted. I have trail cameras on right now to see how they're leaking out that top side of the property. Once that's figured out and you kind of put that time in, I was lucky enough with the way that ground was set up over there that there was some great locations for food plots. Right now, where previously it was like CRP, that like ragweed type plants that were over there. So it was just ultimately, okay, we have an area. It was between two bedding areas. I think this is a great place to put a satellite plot, and that's what we installed. So that's kind of an example of how we've kind of done habitat over hunt on our personal property.
How do you guys view setting expectations for a property? And I'm going to preface it that by saying, you know, I've been on properties with people and communicated with people, and sometimes I think it's easy to have an unrealistic expectation. And with that, it could be from the size of the deer you're trying to target or how often you're seeing deer. One factor in that I've noticed on a lot of properties is, you know, it's not just one sole person hunting a property. A lot of time it's a family property, and there might be brothers and dads and uncles and grandfathers and cousins and stuff, and you work this dynamic of multiple opinions and thought processes and stuff. So like, how do you tailor expectations when you start to add multiple people onto a property? I'm sure you guys have had those kind of experiences when you're hunting with other people, you know, friends, family, whatever, on the same property. So like, how do you take that on from your hunting and then translate that into a consult?
Well, I think, you know, just being upfront and honest with the client, you know, a lot of it depends on, you know, parcel size, neighboring properties, you know, what are your neighbors going to shoot? What are your neighbors going to pass? Getting all that information together and look at the intel and then lay out a plan with them saying, here's what we can expect over the next so many years, you know, and then say this plan is going to be from year one to year three. Then we're going to look at this again in year four and we can adjust and then move from there to see if, you know, all of a sudden, if everyone that's on that property is on the page of, hey, we're going to pass 3.5 and younger. Okay. And you give that a few years and see how it looks. And then you say, okay, well, now we're going to pass our 4.5-year-olds that we think maybe need another year that are maybe only 130, 140 inches. But if we get an opportunity to 150-inch 4.5-year-old, we're going to take him. And you just kind of tweak that over time, you know, especially in the state of PA, we don't get a ton of, one, you don't get a ton of mature deer that really make it to that 4.5, 5.5-year time frame. And that's one of the biggest things that we probably get challenged with is, hey, I want to shoot a big buck. Let's just do what it takes. And the problem is a lot of times to do what it takes is getting age on the deer. So it is passing the deer up. So it's really just tailoring it for the first couple years, seeing how the clients respond to it, seeing how the herd responds to it, and then we adjust year three, year four, year five, and there on after. Hunter, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you nailed that on the head pretty well. I mean, it's PA, I mean, I'm a Midwest whitetail hunter, so the way that you would kind of make that determination in Iowa compared to Pennsylvania, it has its own, I guess, unique ways of how you would handle something like that. Out there, you run into 150s, and that's your typical 120 here. It's just, it's the way that it is, and I mean, that's just the way that it's set up. But here, I think there's different expectations than what there would be out Midwest, so it's just being realistic with it.
And that's one thing we try to push at the start of a consult is, what are your goals and what are your expectations? We get with the clients, we meet with them over a phone call. What are you looking for here? We can kind of already get an idea of what they're wanting from the start before we even set foot on the property, just so we know what they're expecting and what we need to relay to them as a true and honest answer of what they can expect throughout the consult and the visit and in years to come.
Certainly, certainly. Well, I think whitetail hunting, trying to think of what I was going to ask you. I just lost my train of thought. So we'll shift gears off and ask another question. So I have noticed, and I had to learn a very, very hard lesson when it came to hunting a piece of private land. I learned that, and the way I've described it is, I can't out-habitat the hunt, meaning you can't overlook your access. You can't overlook which way you're blowing the wind while you're approaching a stand, while you're on stand, while you're leaving stand, that sort of thing. Learned a couple hard lessons of what I would consider nocturnal deer, and it was really just the way I was hunting. It was forcing those deer off of that property. So when you step foot onto a property, how does the way people hunt it currently, how does that work into your plans when you view a property? I'm having a hard time asking that question, but talk about hunting strategy and helping people maybe change the way they've done something because it became habit on that property.
Yeah. You know, and that kind of goes back to what I said. First thing we're going to do is e-scout it, and then we're going to put boots on the ground. We're going to locate bedding, and then we'll locate food, and we can know, okay, here's bed, here's transition, here's food, here's how we access this. And then we're going to look at how many ways can you access a property. Some people have, they're fortunate where they can access 5, 6, 7 different ways into a property. Some might have one way in and that's it. So that's all going to be depending on how many ways they can access. And then you might, sometimes, not that we're rude by any means, but sometimes you have to kind of just tell the truth of, hey, you've been doing this wrong for so many years. And this is really what you should be doing. You should be, you know, you should only be hunting this set on a west wind or this set on a north wind, and you should be accessing from the south from here, and just giving them a little more of advice on how to, like you said, specifically hunt these stands and areas to generate the most success they can have. Especially in PA, I think that's something that's coming around more, but you know, I still, 90% of the people that I'm friends with, that I, you know, talk hunting with, they ignore wind direction. They ignore access routes. They go in, they might not even descent, or they just don't care. They're still that old, you know, mindset. And sometimes you got to try to break that mold and show them that, hey, this does work. It is proven. This is why we do it this way. Just give us a chance, and trust me, we'll put deer in front of you with these habits that we use ourselves.
If you're looking to simplify your food plot system while enhancing the quality of your soil, you need to check out Vitalize Seed Company. Vitalize provides top quality seed blends designed to fit into their 1-2 planting system. The system has been designed to allow highly diverse plant species to grow synergistically, optimizing nutrient uptake and cycling the way God intended. Reduce your inputs, build your soil, and maximize the quality tonnage for the wildlife in your area. Find out more about this system and get your seed at vitalizeseed.com. And be sure to check them out on Instagram and Facebook.
Listen, landowners, let Stephen Chilcote, land and timber consultant, turn your land into a deer and wildlife magnet. With over 25 years of land and timber management experience, Steve's approach optimizes food and cover to attract deer and increase hunting success for his clients. Visit us online at chilcoteforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510 to make sure your land is the ultimate hunting paradise.
Radix Hunting was founded on premium-grade trail cameras and continues striving to produce the best cellular and conventional trail cameras on the market today. The Gen 600 is a second-generation camera from the Gen Series line. With premium video and audio recording capabilities, this product has become well-respected as the HD video trail camera. In addition to the Gen Series cameras, their M-Core cellular camera has all the features of a quality cell camera at an affordable price. Along with their cameras, they offer stick-and-pick trail camera accessories to allow you to set your cameras just right. You can find it all at RadixHunting.com and be sure to follow Radix Hunting on Instagram and Facebook. Want to check out Radix cameras in person? Stop in at Little Mountain Outfitters in Richland, Pennsylvania and have a peek. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everything you just touched on, sometimes without improving the habitat, without improving food plots and tree cutting and canopy reduce and invasive removal, all that stuff, I think that alone can fix a lot of problems on our properties. Then it just becomes, Absolutely. Okay, how do you take it to the next level? So you were talking about age class of bucks earlier, and you were talking about passing deer and stuff. So one of the things I struggle with is, I don't know how to word this, setting an expectation. Like, let's just say, let's lay this out. Let's just say I've got 2.5-year-old deer fairly commonly on my property, and I might have 4 buck that I believe are 3.5 years old that frequent the property at some point in time. And maybe once every 3 years, I've got a 4-year-old that comes onto my property. The question I always ask in a situation like that is, what's it going to take to see those deer live? Is there something I can do on my small property to get them to the next age class besides my trigger control? Because there's a lot of factors that are going to keep those deer alive. So, you know, I don't know what the average property size is in Pennsylvania. I mean, we've seen anything from 5 acres to hundreds of acres, and I'm sure you're going to see all kinds of things under the sun. So just with that in mind, how do you think, like, from your experience, is there a way of maybe getting deer to the next age class on smaller properties? And, like, just what are your thoughts on that?
It is possible. A lot of it's going to depend on your neighbors too. I'd say, you know, the typical parcel size we see or get consulted on is somewhere between 50 to 100 acres. You know, obviously there's much bigger parcels out there, but the common size we see is about 50 to 100 acres. And it's tough because, you know, my private lease that I have is 430 acres. And those deer are everywhere all over the neighbor's property. They don't even stay on the 430-acre piece. So realistic expectations is we can't keep those deer here all the time, but we can do what we can to keep them here. Maybe it's in daylight hours. Maybe it's majority of the time by establishing bedding areas, doing TSI work, putting in food plots. So they don't have to travel outside the property very far to get what they need. Most of the time, if you can get a deer to 3 to 4.5, you know, those 3.5-year-olds are still kind of stupid. They still wander. They get crazy. They go chasing does. But if you can get a deer to 4.5, you can pretty much get him to stay within, I'd say, the property boundaries or a little bit close to it. It seems as they age, their home range really starts to shrink is what I've noticed. So, again, that's where the bedding, the TSI, creating that native browse or natural browse, putting in food plots, just making them comfortable. And then also that goes back to hunting the property correctly, because the least amount of pressure you can put on those deer, the better. If they experience any amount of pressure, they're gone. And I've noticed with a lot of mature bucks, even if there's a lot of doe pressure, they don't like to be around other deer. They're just kind of solo. They like to do their own thing. So if you can keep the pressure low, establish the property with everything they need, the bedding, the food, water holes are huge because they need water, obviously, that we've already kind of touched on. Just give them everything they need, keep the pressure low, and that's all you can really hope for and do to keep them on the property.
Talk a little bit about implementation of some of the habitat projects. Maybe you've got habitat projects you worked on in the past year or two on some properties you've hunted. Talk about building that foundation of some of those properties and maybe where you see an opportunity to fit yourself in with properties as a consultant and take it on to the next level.
So I think a great example that I have is we've had, three established food plots on a property that we hunt. One of the issues that we were having is those deer coming and feeding in those food plate or those food plots right at dark, right? So the opportunity for you to be able to capitalize is kind of limited based off of that. Something that we decided to do, 2 years ago, it was about 100 yards, 100, 125 yards away, we decided to put in a satellite plot. So with that being said, we planted a plot that had a mixture of clover and brassicas in that, and it carried into where those deer would begin to stage in that food plot. And I mean, the highways or the corridors that you have between that satellite plot and that main food plot that they're feeding in there before dark, they're pretty established highways. But just through trail cameras and observation, they would stage in that food plot within the last hour of before dark. And then with about a half hour, 15 minutes before dark, then they would transition over, which ultimately gave those who hunted that property with us a better opportunity for success. So that was something cool that we implemented within the last couple of years that we found success with.
Gotcha. Tyler, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. I'm going to take it back to the water holes, since I've seen how dynamic they can be after this past season. One thing I do with my water holes is I don't put them around my food plots. And people might say, well, that's kind of crazy. But my theory behind it is those deer might come hit that water hole at 10:30 in the afternoon or 10:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So if I put it next to the food plot, I'm basically giving them a one-stop shop where they come eat, go get a drink, then they're going off to the destination food source, whatever that may be. But I can target them over a water hole because typically I'm probably going to catch them hitting that on the way to the food or coming back from the food. And it just kind of helps set up some same issue that Hunter was running into is I'm not catching them right at dark. Most of those mature bucks aren't moving until last light and things. I'm kind of getting a little bit of a head start on them, catching them coming to the food plot maybe, but I'm a couple hundred yards inside the woods over the water hole on them. So that's what happened this year for me and that buck. It was 2:30. He came to the water hole, got a drink, and came right by 20 yards. So I think any little thing you can do, and it could just be a little water hole out of a plastic tote, a metal trough from Tractor Supply. Any little thing that just gives them something to come get a drink real quick on their way to their next stop.
Yeah, that's a fantastic suggestion, and I have to agree with that 100%. I think putting a food plot and a water hole and all this attraction in one central location, it is minimizing the opportunity for diversifying your stand locations and spreading out movement on your property. I think about a property, I would love it to have as much of that to the deer as possible and then have as many different wind opportunities to hunt as possible. And the way we hunt, Hunter, you shot your buck this year on a food plot. Man, the first 10 days of season, of archery season, man, that is a fantastic time for an evening capitalization sit on a good buck. They're not expecting it to come and watch the wind, and sometimes the stars can align, and that is a fantastic opportunity. But, man, if you don't have that success, like you just said, in those first 10 days, then, moving on to October, November, December, how are those deer going to move? And what's the behavior of a deer? And I think taking that knowledge that you guys have and putting that into a property is going to be huge. Talk a little bit about some of the equipment and implementation that you've had on some properties, and talk a little bit about what you think that's going to look like moving forward in your consults.
You want to take it, Hunter? You want me to take one?
Yeah, I can. So, okay. Some common equipment that we've used in years past. It's been a mess just because we've never really invested to have the right equipment in years past. And now we're finally getting to the point where it's time to invest, get the right equipment to be able to install food plots more efficiently. Going back to the 5 years ago when my father and I started this, and it's just, like I said, it's been just trial and error over time where you learn and you kind of just carry it over. It started where we had a side-by-side. Well, no, it was a quad. We had a four-wheeler, and literally we had, like, bed springs that you drag around just to try to tear up the dirt enough to be able to have that seed-to-soil contact to make a clover plot. The property that I hunt, it got strip mined for coal in the 60s. So you have about a quarter inch of dirt to be able to work with before you hit straight shale. So that kind of makes food plots more complex on that property. So kind of what we have found to be most successful is clover. And that's kind of what we established there. But just over time, we just from going from a quad to where 3 or 4 years ago, we upgraded to a side-by-side. And that enabled us to kind of use hares and other sorts of equipment. We have now a sprayer that goes on the back of that side-by-side, and it enabled us to finally be able to spray and control weeds better, whether it's with 2,4-DB, Clef, Gly, whatever it is. And then something else that we really got into within the last 2 years spraying-wise is liquid fertilizer. That's been an absolute game-changer for us here over the last 2 years. But just upgrading to a side-by-side has really helped us. We have a subcompact New Holland. It's a 24-horse tractor. It has its limitations because of the weight of equipment that you put on the back of it. We've had great success using a single plow. We'll use a single plow to be able to plant like sorghum, for example, where you're kind of doing those screens on your plots. Single plow is perfect for that. We're upgrading tractors this year to where we'll be able to handle discs, a double plow to kind of be able to cover more or larger areas for doing these plot installs. Something that we jumped into last year that I highly recommend is using a cul-de-packer. Man, just the way that the seed has came up and the improvements that we've had just within the first 2 or 3 weeks of planting through the germination and starting up, a cul-de-packer is such a game changer, and I'd highly recommend that too. The cul-de-packer we had, I remember texting Tyler pictures of it when we found it. It's large. It's an 8-foot cul-de-packer that's actually one of the double rolls. And it's not like you're going to be able to take that from property to property to be able to use. So I grew up on 15 acres with my parents. That's where that cul-de-packer is for the 2.5 acres that we do there. Something that I'm personally looking into this year, I'm not sure, Mitch, if you've heard of the company called PackerMax. Have you heard of PackerMax?
Absolutely.
So now I'm looking into getting – I want a 6-foot cul-de-packer, a PackerMax cul-de-packer. It's going to be so much easier to be able to move around, to transport. You can fill them with water or sand. So that's kind of the direction that we're going. That way we can be more mobile with cul-de-packing. But that is such a huge part of food plotting that we missed before where, oh, my gosh, that can really help you set yourself up for success.
Yeah. So like Hunter said, I mean, all great equipment. I usually use the same on my personal properties and any client properties we can get them to. But I'll use an example. I had a client property this past season in the summer where we couldn't get equipment to it. So we did a straight poor man's plot. I took a backpack sprayer in with a weed eater, and it was probably a little over an eighth of an acre. And the client had 27 acres, 22 acres. But then he had about another 70 acres leased around him. So he had almost 100 acres. And we went in and we actually did a poor man's plot. Weed-eated down all of the vegetation, just basically moved and cut up whatever down trees or anything were in the way. We found the most open canopy we could find. This client had it timbered about 12 years ago. So there was a couple decent spots we saw on maps that looked like there were some decent openings. Went in and we did nothing more than weed-eat it, spray it, killed it, went back, broadcasted seed and into clover in the summer, and it came up great. We went back just before season and started layering it with cereal rye, and the client actually told me that was probably one of the best seasons they ever had. They were seeing, you know, 5, 6, 7 bucks in an evening hunting there, multiple bucks every sit. He was so pleased with how things played out for the season just from implementing one small food plot in his property, and it was just a straight poor man's plot with no tools, nothing special.
That's a great point. So yes. Talk about food plots. You know, we could talk about food. That could be a podcast for years on end, because there's so much about the intricacies of implementation and plant species and fertility and timing and blah, 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 blah. It's one of those things that I'm highly fascinated with and I love, but it's a percentage of a property, right? It's and there's a lot of different numbers that can come. I've heard people say it should be 10% of your property or 20% of your property. And some properties, if you can get 5%, you're really lucky just because of the way that property lays out and stuff. So talk a little bit about implementation outside of that food plot world on properties you've had and what you think some of the most important tools of the trade are in taking a property from good to great.
I think one important thing you got to look at first is deer density when it comes to these implementations of the food plot is you got to see how many deer. I mean, if you're getting 30, 40 deer in a half acre food plot in an evening, you might as well forget about planting anything besides clover, you know. So it really, deer density plays a lot into it to start with. If it's a property that's completely, you know, blank slate, that's never had food plots before, can you put a half acre brassica plot in? It's going to sustain how many deer are there. So, and Hunter might, he can follow up on this, but I think running a trail cam for trail cameras for a certain amount of weeks to find your deer density. And that's really going to tell you what type of plots you can have that can handle that amount of deer and throughout the season and summer and late season.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think it goes back to, you know, Tyler saying that he's a stickler with topography, right? Figuring out where those bedding areas are, where your pinch points are, where you have water. I'm a huge proponent for hunting creek bottoms, so I try to stick close to the water. But those are all things to take into consideration. Some other things to think about is the openness of your property, right? If your property is just so thick, it's going to be a job to put a food plot in on something that's so thick. Plus, you might be eliminating potential bedding. So I think that, like what we said, when we go out on a consult, one of the first things that we're going to look at, we're going to walk that property and get a feel for the land before we come up with any recommendations. Whether it's 50, 100 acres, it thoroughly needs to be gone through before you can make that determination.
And sometimes the food plot's not always the answer. If you got a property that's got 20 acres of tillable ground, you know, I'm going to suggest, hey, is there a local farmer that you can lease it to row crop it? Can you put beans in? Can you put corn in a destination food source? And someone's going to pay you to do that. You know, why not make a little money off your property, plus also increase the success that you have hunting with row crops? I mean, really, row crops are still the go-to. I mean, to put a bean field in or a corn field in, that's going to be just as good, if not better, than some of these, you know, food plots that you're going to implement. And it's going to basically pay you for someone else to do it.
Right. And there's definitely some truth to that. There's also the flip side to that too, where there's a lot of properties I've been to over the years that there's so much emphasis on agriculture. And I have developed the opinion over time, and I've kind of said this with working on farms and working in agriculture now, the efficiency of our equipment in the world of agriculture today is so much better than it was 20 years ago, than it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and all that stuff. It is feast, and then it is famine. What happens a lot of time. You know, we might have a smorgasbord of summer annual crops like corn and soybeans, maybe grain sorghum. When that matures and ripens in September, that's going to be a food source. You know, hay fields, you know, a mixed hay field that might have alfalfa. Maybe it's got, you know, different grasses that small games and things like that are going to be attracted to. You know, that's all well and good, but there's a couple issues with that. Once that harvester comes through that field, it becomes famine. And, you know, this was a perfect year example, the dry weather that we had in the fall. I saw a lot of corn and beans that were getting taken off early October, mid-October. And if that's something you're relying on a property, man, you could be missing the mark. Another thing to consider is hay fields. You know, a lot of people think that having hay is great and alfalfa is great for deer and stuff. What about turkeys? Do you like turkey hunting? One of the biggest issues that we have with hay fields is hay gets cut in early May. And one of the best places for a turkey to nest is in a hay field, in an alfalfa field, and those big disc spines come through and can take nests, they can kill hens, they can do a lot of things. So while agriculture might have some benefit to it, looking at your property and understanding where you lack the most in your general area as far as food and cover, sometimes biting the bullet and saying, yeah, I might be paying my taxes and maybe even making a little bit of revenue on agriculture being done on my farm and paying for that stuff, maybe I actually need to take fields out of agriculture and maybe convert back to wildlife because I need better food, better cover, better browse, things like that. And I think that's something that can easily get missed by a lot of places. I mean, you guys have any thoughts on that or other ideas that spring off of that?
Yeah, it's a lot of that's just depending on, like you said, like what the property has already. You know, up here, food plots are becoming more and more frequent, more and more common. But agriculture around the areas is becoming a lot less common. You know, most of the places around here, most places we consult, there might not be a bean field or a cornfield within 20, 30 miles. Something that can sustain, you know, some browse pressure from the deer and turkeys and things. But again, it's all depending on the client's property, what it could set up for. And what I like about having destination food sources like an ag field is then we can implement some kill plots and before them, because then, like Hunter said, what they did with that staging plot, that is a huge, huge opportunity to put in some staging plots, and these deer are going to hit in the daylight hours on their way to the destination food source. So it can play a big factor into success of the hunt for you.
You know, one thing that hasn't been touched on that I personally think's overlooked, talk about ag, we talk about food plots. What about crab apples, acorns? I mean, I don't know. Me personally, just from my observations last fall, acorns were ridiculous last fall. And in the areas where I had crabapple trees, they were phenomenal too. Man, the deer were hammering them. But those are two other things that I feel like crabapples get overlooked more than oaks with acorns. But crabapples are awesome, man. If you can find an area where you have multiple crabapple trees, you're set. As long as they're on. But I do think that those are some other things that get overlooked. Everybody has this mindset of ag and food plots. We got a clear land to put a food plot in. What about what you have? Have you taken inventory of what you have, being realistic with what you have? If there's a way that you can hunt crabs or acorns, you can't beat it.
Well, and to kind of piggyback off of what you just said there, Hunter, you know, there's ways that you can improve acorn production. There's ways that you can improve mass crop production. There's a lot of other habitat things that we're not even discussing outside of food plots. Talk a little bit about some of that you guys have worked on the property. What are some of the other, you know, tools of the trade and implementation things that, you know, you see outside of the food plot world that you're implementing on properties and really sets that apart from one property to the next?
Or you want to take it?
Yeah, I can jump in. No, so in the last couple of years, something that I'm learning to do and we're getting better with is hinge cutting. I think hinge cutting is an awesome way to create bedding. Now's about the time of the year to start doing it. But over time, since we've hinge cutted those areas, just from scouting, we've bounced deer out of those areas. And man, does it feel good to know that the deer are actually utilizing those areas for bedding. Something that my father and I both tried getting into that there's still some opportunity for improvement is grafting trees. That's something that I think would be awesome if you could get it to take off, where I know that a lot of people have had success with. We've had a couple take, but our success rate isn't high enough for that to be something that would offer.
And I'll kind of piggyback off what Hunter said with the TSI and the hinge cutting. It creates a lot of regen, a lot of native browse. It creates a lot of food for these deer throughout a year that they can depend on when you do that type of a habitat work to the property. And again, that doesn't really cost anything except a little bit of hard work and sweat equity with a chainsaw to go in there and improve a property like that. And you can kind of double up on the food and creating new bedding or more bedding to hold more deer. So it's a great option to try.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'll say something else and I'll jump in here. And this sounds basics 101, but something that we've done that we've found success with, in and around where those crabapple trees are. You got young crabapple trees that aren't really established yet that are trying to grow, and you have that overgrowth of whether it's an ash tree or a different type of tree. We'll hinge cut that down or cut that down completely to enable the sunlight and to be able to be absorbed ultimately, and to try to help the growth of crabapple trees just because they're so beneficial.
One thing I do recommend too is if you have a property and you're wanting to do some TSI, some hinge cutting, just some improvements, it doesn't hurt to pay a forester if you got the money to come in and tell you what you have tree-wise too. Last thing you want to do is go in there and hinge cut a nice oak tree or a black walnut tree and you're losing out on a couple $1,000s. So it's also nice to know what you have to work with too. If you don't know your tree species, you don't know what you're looking at, you know, it pays to just have an expert come in and walk that property with you and let you know what you have timber-wise on that property.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, boys, we could probably, you know, snowball so many different conversations, and I think what I'd rather do is let's go throughout the year and let's try to come up with some other ideas that we can talk about as far as implementation throughout the season, and talk a little bit more about what you guys have to offer and maybe some successful stories you've had over time. So, you know, before we go, just give us a quick shout out. You know, what's the name of the company? What is what's going to be a way people can get a hold of you, you know, get on schedule for consults in 2025, that sort of thing?
Hunter, I'll let you take it since you run the social media side of everything. And contact info.
No problem. So right now we currently have Instagram and Facebook at New Era Habitat Services. My name's Hunter Scott. We have Tyler Hand here, like we talked about. We would be the two people that you would contact. Our phone numbers are connected directly through Facebook and Instagram. You can also catch us this spring at the Laurel High School Sportsman's Night. That would be February 28th. It's a Friday night. And we will also be at the Central Pennsylvania Outdoor Show March 14th to the 16th.
And pretty simple. We're pretty pretty flexible. Send us a message on social media. Send us a text message. Give us a call. Anyway, email. We'll respond to you as soon as we can get all the questions answered, get you on the schedule for a consult.
Good deal. Well, anything we should close this out on before we head on to bigger and better things here this week?
I think the big thing when it comes to New Era Habitat Services is where we're at and why we came up with this is because we've learned from the failures that we've had, and we want to help people with their properties and show how our successes can turn into their successes. I think that's big for us. We look forward to the challenge. I think it's going to be an interesting 2025 here, and I know Tyler and I are both very excited.
Yeah, very much so. We just enjoy helping people. We take as much pride when we see a client harvest a deer they wanted to shoot, or just a deer in general, over their property that we help with, as us harvesting the deer ourselves. You know, it goes a long way, and it's very satisfying when we see that.
Absolutely.
That work come full circle.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this week's show. I look forward to the next one. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good night, guys.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.